And I remember smiling and even laughing out loud. And from that moment on, I recognized for myself that I always have that choice. And when I would look, we do that to ourselves. You know, we poke a sore tooth with our tongue. Like we just can't stop poking it, you know? Or, you know, how you relive, you know, maybe a conversation that was conflict or an argument, you tend to just play it over and over and again in your mind. You have a choice whether you do that or not.
Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What, where we talk about how to make your next chapter in life your best chapter. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I believe that the best is yet to come. Part of being human is experiencing love, happiness, and joy. And at times, we all go through those times of grief, disappointment, or simply unmet expectations. When that happens, it's what we do next that matters the most, because that determines if and how fast we find our way back to joy, or if we continue to find more disappointment and more negativity. In this conversation, my guest, Deborah Covell-Fletcher, and I talk about how we can intentionally find joy, grace, and acceptance in life, how we can exercise choice even when it's tough. And by the way, even when it is tough is probably when it's most important to exercise choice. We also talk about the power of humor to lift us up, and that when we put our attention on the negative, unfortunately, that's what we get more of. So a little bit about my guest before we meet her. Deborah is an adult educator, author, and speaker. She's also the mom of twin daughters. She is the author of Finding Your Hey, A Crash Course in Braving Grief and Embracing Joy. She is also an advocate for her daughter, who lives with multiple disabilities. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I have to start with this, because I know your book is called, I want to make sure I get this right, Finding Your Hey, A Crash Course in Braving Grief and Embracing Joy. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Tell me about finding your hey. What's your hey?
So, you know, we all experience grief and, you know, our expectations aren't met, all those things in life. My sort of big catalyst in terms of the grief that I experienced was I had twin daughters almost 24 years ago, and one was born with severe disabilities. So she has cerebral palsy. She uses a wheelchair. She eats through a G-tube. She's nonverbal. She's incontinent. And so that was really tough at the beginning, as I'm sure you could imagine.
Absolutely.
And so that was my crash course. I mean, it was just suddenly, bam. Now, the finding your hey comes from my father was my inspiration. So he had a heart attack and a stroke when he was 46 years old. And I was 21 at the time.
Oh.
So that was my first, not only my first experience with grief, but also, I mean, with myself feeling that emotion, really. Mm-hmm. But I also got to witness his own recovery and dealing with his own grief. He lived, and he lived to be 82. But the stroke did damage to his mental processing. So he completely lost his speech at first. He got it back for the most part through 2 years of speech therapy. That's awfully young for something that catastrophic to happen.
And
unfortunately, he was never able to work in his career again. So he was unable to work. So financially, socially, you know, that feeling of accomplishment, like all that was taken from him. And so I watched him deal with that with grace and positivity. And he lived a wonderful life full of love and wonderful experiences. So when he was first, he had a heart attack and he was still in the hospital and he had a stroke 9 days later. And when I learned of that, I remember I was at my mother's house, my mom and dad's house. And so I called the hospital and I quite literally couldn't understand a word he was saying because he lost his speech. It was just this garbled. Mm. And I was devastated. My, you know, ever articulate you know, life of the party dad. And so the next morning when I went to visit him at the hospital, I was feeling this sense of dread and, you know, sadness and just horrible feelings. So I walk into the hospital. I'm walking down the corridor towards his room. I don't know how he knew I was coming, but all of a sudden he leapt, like just jumped out of his room into the hallway and just arms outstretched, just went, "Hey," like that to greet me. And that was, I mean, honestly, that was the only word that I understood the whole visit that we had. And, you know, I mean, obviously he was saying, "I'm okay. It's okay. It's going to be okay, my baby." Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he did that for me, but I always thought of it as a symbol of what he did for himself as well. You know, so he, as I said, he managed to come through his own grief.
Yeah.
And live this life full of intentionally finding the good in life and, you know, dealing with all his issues with, for the most part, grace and acceptance. And so then cut to many years later when I have my daughters and I'm experiencing this tremendous grief and loss of expectations. And, you know, this isn't what I thought my life would be like. And I'm so devastated for her and everything else. And I just thought, oh, I got to find my hay, you know, like I got, you know, he was my sort of role model for dealing with challenges in life. And it's not that you just go, "Oh, well, those don't matter. I'm just going to carry on." It's more complex than that, obviously.
Way more.
So, you know, as I went through everything, and my daughter, by the way, is just pure joy. And, you know, she leads a very happy, fulfilling life. She is not able to participate in the working world. She, you know, she went to school and was in special education programs. And she now attends a day program that a bunch of parents, we got together and created this recreation day program for our kids that are in similar situations. And it's run by recreation therapists who it's just fun and games all day. So she, you know, she leads a very happy life. So, but I had to learn to come to terms with my loss of expectations. And so when they were about 18, 19 years old, I started thinking about how I had come through it and how I was choosing to live this life of finding the joy and embracing all of the happy moments in life and so on. And I thought about my dad. And so I sat down and thought, I'm going to write a book. And to structure it, I interviewed four friends of mine who all experienced, as we all do, different grief stories, you know, completely different from mine. And I recorded their stories and then how they've come through on the other side. You never get over things. You just learn how to carry them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, between their stories, my story, my dad's story, I was able to sort of pull together some almost strategies and tactics in a sense that came through from all of our stories and sort of weave these stories together. And in the end, talk about that intentional way of choosing positivity and choosing happiness, even in circumstances that don't provide that.
Yeah, I love that.
And that was a very long answer to your question.
No, there's so much in there though, Deborah. Like, and it was you painted such a great visual. I could just kind of see your dad like, "Hey," but here's something that stood out to me. You said he was 46 when he had the heart attack and stroke, right?
Yeah.
And he lived to be 82?
Yes.
So not quite half of his life, but
yeah,
a good portion of his life. Can you imagine had he not found his way to accepting that? And think about it.
You know, I mean, there's probably lots of people that don't. And I, mm-hmm. you know, this was just in him because, of course, you know, that was a long time ago. He passed away in 2020. So, you know, so you're talking 40 years ago, and there was no grief counseling for him or anything, no supports in terms of his emotional state. He just kind of, this is just who he is. And he's a very smart man. So he recognized that, you know, this could spiral, you know, into something really dark. He got up every day, showered, shaved, got dressed, and he had nowhere to go. You know, I mean, he wasn't going to work. Physically, he was not impacted in a negative way from the stroke. So, and he recovered from his heart attack because he was so young, you know, so he was able to, he golfed, and, he actually golfed right up until about 3 months before his death. And he ended up dying of congestive heart failure because, you know, I mean, that his heart had sustained a lot of damage at that age of 46. And so it sort of was that accumulated damage that, that ended up, you know, just being too much for his heart and his body. So he made that decision, and, you know, probably a lot of it was for us, you know, his wife and his children. And, but he also would have recognized that it was for himself. And it's funny because I talked to him when he was 69, he shot a hole in one.
No way.
And, and then get this, 6 weeks later, he shot another hole in one. And so I said to him, it makes sense that you did it again because you were in this state of thinking anything is possible.
That's right.
And he said, that's exactly it. And he said, when he putts, every time he putts, he expects the ball to go in the hole, and it usually does. It's so that's the kind of attitude that he lived his life, you know, because really when it comes down to it, we can all choose how we feel by what our thoughts are telling us, you know, and we can control that. I had a real sort of aha moment when my daughters were young. So they are twins, as I said. And so I would be taking them in a double stroller, walking down the street. And if I happened to pass another double stroller coming my way. So this is on sort of a busy, you know, street with shops and restaurants and that kind of thing, which is right near where I live. And I would always look in that stroller. And if there was a healthy set of twins in there, I would just stick a knife in my chest, right? And if it was little girl twins, I would just plunge that knife right in. And I always had to look. And most of the time it was, you know, maybe a one-year-old and a three-year-old in a double stroller, you know. And that's what I did. So this is, you know, my girls were fairly young at the time. And then one day I'm walking down the street, pushing my little stroller, and a double stroller is coming towards me from the other direction. And a voice in my head said, just don't look. And I mean, it was my voice, obviously. But I didn't look. I didn't look in the stroller. So I don't know if it was siblings or little friends or twins. And it just didn't matter. And the stroller passed me. And I remember smiling and even laughing out loud. And from that moment on, I recognized for myself that I always have that choice, you know? And when I would look, we do that to ourselves. You know, we poke a sore tooth with our tongue. Like we just can't stop poking it, you know, and we tend to seek out, And we tend to seek out things, or, you know, how you relive, you know, maybe a conversation that was conflict or an argument, you tend to just play it over and over and again in your mind. You have a choice whether you do that or not. And so in this moment, it really came to light for me that I have a choice whether to look in that stroller or not. And in fact, I have a choice as I go through my life, what I focus on. You know, am I focusing on the negative? Am I focusing on the positive? And that's exactly what my dad did. I mean, he chose to not focus on what he could no longer do. He couldn't go to work. He couldn't hang out with his friends and colleagues and couldn't earn money. He couldn't experience life the way he had been used to doing. And so he focused on those aspects of his life that he still had. You know, yeah. He still had the love of his wife and his children, and he could still experience things. And, you know, it's funny, when his friends retired, you know, almost 20 years later at age 65, then the playing field was kind of leveled. Then they were all, you know, out golfing together, and it was a different experience for him. But it's all about choice, and you know, that's going to be a little tool that you can put in your tool belt for managing challenging situations as you encounter them throughout your life.
Yeah. I'm really big on choice, because choice is, it really is everything. And, yeah. And you're exactly right. When we have that sore tooth, our tongue cannot leave it alone. I mean, it's like we got 30 some other good teeth or however many we have, but we're going to poke on that one.
No.
So right. You know, I think that we put our attention on the negative.
Yes. And
we are doing that to ourselves.
We are. And it's actually partly biological. We have this, you know, part of our brain called the amygdala, and that's the fight, flight, or freeze portion of our brain. And it's always scanning, and it's always looking for something that's going to threaten us. And so, unfortunately, it's the part of the brain that responds first before our, you know, our actual thinking brain can respond. And it's got this negativity bias. It's always thinking, you know, what's out to get me? And so that's why we just focus on the negative, because we're just trying to protect ourselves, I guess. I mean, it takes a lot of effort to look for the good and look for the positive, you know. And I mean, everybody's talking about gratitude and the power of gratitude and how it can shift your mental focus and your emotional state and so on. And I was having a coffee with a girlfriend about a month ago. And she said, you know, everybody says, oh, write down three things at the end of the day that you're grateful for. And so she says, oh, I'm grateful. You know, I've been doing this every day. I'm grateful for having a roof over my head, and my dog is wonderful, and my daughter's doing really well. And she said, it just gets, you know, it doesn't mean anything. And I said, that can happen. And I said, so what if you chose, because this is what I do, what if you chose three different things every day? And it could be something like, oh, I'm so happy my jeans fit today. Or, you know, I got a great parking spot, right? Or
that's right.
Flower come up in my garden. Like, it doesn't have to be
big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so in terms of that, I just find that so helpful.
Yeah. The three good things. Another thing, this was, he's a friend of mine. He's been on my podcast a few times, and we just recorded another episode a couple of weeks ago. He's the type of person that every time you talk to him, you're like, oh, boom, insight, boom. I just love it. But he talked about, for his gratitude practice, he includes at least one thing that he is grateful to himself for.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
Okay. That is a game changer.
Yeah.
Love
I'm like,
it.
Michael, as soon as he said it, I'm like, because you're like, I'm grateful I did my weights today, or I'm grateful, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for the way I handled that or whatever. I just loved that.
Yeah.
You know? No.
I love it too.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I just thought that one bared repeating.
It does. That is awesome. Yes. That's huge.
Yeah. And you're totally right too, because you said it takes work to see the positive, because it's not our natural response.
Yeah.
And I know that for myself, like, it's been a journey, right? I'm a very positive person, and it still takes work. You know, like you can spend a lot of time looking at whether it's relationships or whatever it might be. Oh, you know, so-and-so, why doesn't so-and-so like me? And over here on the other side, you have 10 people waiting to give you hugs or who support you, but we obsess about the one.
That's right.
You know,
so we absolutely do.
Yep. We do. We totally do. So what is your experience, or what have you learned about how do we, I don't know, do the work on the positivity so that we're, I guess, I don't know, maybe more mindful with the choices we're making that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I find that it's a habit, And so because you are actually changing those neural pathways, you know, and so it takes more work at first, but it's like any other habit. And apparently habits take longer than 21 days to form. And so what's interesting is if you can link the habit with something that with something that you already do as a habit.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's you when you're brushing your teeth every day, you think about what your intention for the day is going to be and focus on what positive things you're going to accomplish or do or experience, you know. So it's like if you link it that way, because it has to become a habit.
Yeah.
And then you eventually do get better at being able to focus on the positive aspects, and you get better at looking for the positive because it just does become a habit as you go through your day.
Yeah. So habit stacking.
It really is about the stacking. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a powerful mechanism.
It is. It is. You know, there's this is probably sharing too much, but I do a particular exercise when I'm blow drying my hair, and I do like, what are they called? Like squats or pliés. And so, you know, looks weird. if anybody happens to be passing by the bathroom, but I linked that years ago. And now I cannot stand just still upright and dry my hair. Like they are so permanently linked, which is
weird. But that's a great thing, right? Why not take advantage of that time? My hair was longer. I just recently cut my hair. It used to be like down to, I don't know, a little bit past my shoulders, and I have really thick hair. It was at least 25 minutes with the blow dryer just to get that mop.
No wonder you cut your hair.
I was like, good Lord. And it's so thick. Even when I was washing it, it would take 15 minutes just to get the soap, the shampoo and the conditioner in and then rinsed all the way. I'm like, I have too much other stuff I want to be doing, but what a great use of time. I love that. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a silly little thing but
it works.
And those kinds of actions work. And I mean, that's a physical thing, but you could do a mental thing as well, or mental/ emotional, you know, habit thing.
Yep. I love that. One thing I read recently, it was one of Wayne Dyer's books. He was talking about a simple thing too, is to just check in with yourself and say, is what I'm thinking about, is it making me feel good or bad? I'm like, that is such a simple tool.
It is. It's absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know,
it's sometimes hard to recognize when we're feeling something negative, but you can almost see the signs in your body. Like if your heart's beating fast, or, you know, you've got fists and you're all sweaty, and, you know, it's almost like your body can tell you before your brain can tell you that, oh, you're feeling, you know, you're feeling anxious, or you're feeling whatever that negative emotion is.
Right. Yeah. And then that's our opportunity to make the choice and to shift.
That's right.
You know, that's not always easy. It's not, I mean, I'm the first to say it's not easy.
It's not. And you really have to find a practice almost that works for you. So, you know, whether it's petting your dog or you know, stepping outside for a moment or whatever it is, you have to just kind of break that negativity and physically and mentally.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned the dog, because it's so funny the way life works. I was listening to something today. I love Headspace. I don't know. It's a meditation app, and I love Headspace. And they were interviewing people on what are their best mental health practices. And the one gal was saying, when she feels stressed, like she's like, I've learned to recognize when I'm feeling stress, and she works from home. And she said, and like me, her dog's always at her feet, apparently. She's like, I take that moment to get down and pet my dog and really look in his eyes. Because yes. For anyone who has a dog, when you look at your dog, what do you see? You see love.
Yeah.
And she's like, it shifts me right back into a positive state. So
100% acceptance, love, adoration, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So wanted to ask you this too. So in, you know, watching your dad and your own experience and plus interviewing your friends for the book, what were some of the things that you, what were some of the big takeaways or ahas you had from that?
Well, some of the strategies that, that, and I mean, you've heard this as well, but that a couple of my friends have used is journaling and how powerful that is to get the emotions out. So that's not so much a strategy as a tactic. Like you can actually practice doing that. And that is going to really help to get those feelings out and also to process it. You know, apparently as humans, we process by talking to other people. Mm-hmm. And, but you can do that for yourself by writing it down as well, because it is similar to saying the words out loud. And that's something that, that I think can be really helpful for other people as well. And the other, the other strategy that has always worked for me, and this was something that, that it might very much help my father as well, is finding the humor in situations, and even situations that aren't funny in the moment. Maybe you can look back and it's almost like you can turn a situation into a funny story or into, you know, you can imagine it happening to a character on a sitcom or something. And easiest moments, you know, my ex-husband and I, the father of my children, could find those funny moments. And it really, it's something that is also a practice that can be learned, which, you know, there's different ways to find that. In the moment, turning to something that you know will make you laugh is also, so the humor isn't coming from you or your situation, but you can, you know, watch a funny YouTube video, or, you know, there's so many ways to experience comedy or humor now. So that's a different tactic, is watching something from outside yourself. So there's finding the humor in your own situation, watching something. I actually once participated in laughter yoga. I don't know if you've ever tried it.
I've never heard of that.
It is bizarre. So it's a room full of people and you're all together, and the instructor took us through, I guess, breathing exercises at first, and then through these laughing exercises, and it's all your fake laughing. Like, you know, they say, okay, just do this. Ha, 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 ha. And then, like, I mean, you just start, but by the end, you are genuinely laughing, like tears streaming down your face, knee slapping. Wow. And what's interesting is that you're looking at all the other people doing this and you're almost bonding with them. Mm-hmm. And it just lifts all of those good hormones that and chemicals that we want to bring into our brains and our bodies, you know, because when you're stressed or experiencing something negative, you've got cortisol and, you know, the adrenaline and everything. But this brings in the, you know, dopamine and all serotonin, all those good chemicals. And it leaves you feeling happier, more positive, more in control. So if that can happen through literally nothing funny going on, just fake laughing, turning into laughing, imagine how you can do that for yourself.
That's right.
So you can bring that humor in, and, you know, finding that funny story again, it might have to happen after the fact and you look back on it, because things aren't always funny in the moment.
No.
You know, I remember that when my when my daughter had surgery, she had surgery on her spine, and we were in Sick Kids Hospital, which is a pretty renowned children's hospital. We're fortunate to have it here in Toronto. And the surgery was so long. I don't know, it was 10 or 12 hours. Her dad and I were the only parents left in the surgical waiting room. And like, they were starting to turn the lights down in the hospital, and, you know, they started cleaning the floors outside. Like, literally we were still there alone. And, you know, out of a room full of 100 parents. So finally our surgeon came in and it was over. And so it was not a particularly, you know, funny experience. And yet we, you know, so many funny things happened in the hospital during our stay. And we would laugh about just the little moments that would happen. You know, we took turns sleeping in her room, and there was just this sort of pullout chair thing that for parents to sleep on, it was hard as a rock. And so, you know, we would just tell each other the story of our night, which was just always horrific, and laugh about it. You know, I mean, it's like all you can do. And so she has these metal rods in her back, and one is made out of titanium. And so, of course, doesn't play as often now, but, you know, that song Titanium, David Guetta with Sia, every time that came on the radio, I'd say, "Quinn, it's your song." And we'd laugh and cheer and, you know, I mean, just stupid stuff, right? But when we told the stories of that hospital stay to our friends, there was always an element of humor mixed in, because if we didn't, then it's just really depressing, you know?
It's terribly depressing.
Yeah. And so we're just able to do that. It's kind of who we are, but it can also be a learned behavior that you take yourself lightly.
Yeah. And, and even just acknowledging sometimes it's when my dad was in the hospital, you know, he passed away in November, and my little sister and I were there leading up for that week. And there was nothing that was funny about that. Like, no. he was 89. There were times where he had vast delirium. And then, so in the moment, it's like, this is horrible. It's like, it's horrible. We had bruises from wrestling with them. It was because he was trying to pull out his catheter. But even then, like, as we would tell each other, like, you know, like, oh, she'd be coming in because she spent the nights and I'd be there during the day. And I'd be like, "You're not going to believe this." And like, he'd say the most random, bizarre stuff. And then when I'm repeating it back to her, we're both laughing so hard. Like, occurred to us, like, we're laughing about this. But I think that's how it's a coping.
It is. And you know, it is a coping mechanism. And just recognizing that it's not being disrespectful and honoring it, and then looking for it, you know, finding, because I call it finding the funny, you know, because sometimes you have to search for it. It's just not going to happen automatically.
Yeah. And when you were saying the thing about the laughter yoga, I was thinking, I just heard this or read this recently, and I don't know where now, but it was about when we force ourselves to smile.
Yes.
If we do that enough, our brains don't know the difference between genuine. So if we smile enough, it can literally shift our brains. I mean,
I know.
That's why watching a sitcom can be good for you. You know?
Yes, it can. It can. We are that simple. I mean, our brains are so complex.
Oh my goodness.
But we're also that simple, which is, I mean, that's kind of funny when you think about it, we can so easily change our mood and we have that control. And I think that once we recognize that we aren't just victims of our circumstances, our environment, or what's happening outside of ourselves, we always have that control. And on that response, right? There's that saying that, you know, it's not the rain that ruined your picnic. It's how you responded to the rain. It's how you felt about it and how you complained about it and how you felt, you know, like it's all about that power that we have to intentionally respond in a positive way or not.
Mm-hmm. And it is so powerful. I mean, if we learn to harness the full power of our minds, that's the key. It's the way to happiness.
Right. You know?
And it's not about being perfect either. I mean, are we always going to make the best choice or the best response? No, we're not. But we can do our best to learn and to grow and not to repeat it.
You absolutely can. And to learn from those and to be aware of when you're learning, right? And to recognize that lesson that, oh, I've just learned something there. And it's really about training your mind to do that. Again, it's forming that habit and forming the habit of, you know, looking for the joy. I was out on Saturday night with a friend within a group of friends. And I happened to be in this place where we were going to see this band play who they do cover songs. Like they do, you know, songs like Sweet Caroline and all those songs that you want to, which is so fun, right?
Yeah.
But it also happened to be the night of our hockey team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, playing a playoff game, the first round of the playoffs, and our team won. So we won the game and won our first round of the hockey playoffs, which for Torontonians, that is a huge thing.
It's big.
It's ridiculous, right? So the whole bar just erupted. Everybody is like, no one could stop smiling. Then a band comes on that starts playing songs that you know all the words to. And we were singing and screaming and dancing. And I just stepped outside myself and I went, wow, this is a moment of pure joy. You know, so no matter what is going on in my life, yeah, bills to pay and, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. And it's not that it doesn't matter. Of course it does. But in this moment, I am going to experience this moment of pure, ridiculous joy and, you know, and just allow that to wash over you and then hold on to it and remember it and recall it and, you know, feel it again after the fact. And
I love that. I love that. It took me right back to, I was at a bar with some friends. It was a client thing and they'd been friends of mine for years. This was way back, I think it was 2016. And the Cubs finally won the game to go to the World Series.
Right.
And it was I couldn't stop shaking. People were like, you're vibrating. I'm like, I think I am. Cause I've been a Cubs fan like my whole life. It was so,
so
I totally get what that feels like. Oh my God. This has been amazing, Deborah. So why don't you tell people a little bit about your book and how they can find you and all that kind of stuff?
Okay. So the name of the book is, as you said, Finding Your Hey, a Crash Course in Braving Grief and Embracing Joy. And it is available at Amazon.com. You can find it there. I also have a stash in my dining room, but you know, it's a long trip to come to Toronto. So you might as well order it from Amazon. And my website is DeborahCovell.com.
Perfect. I hope that you all loved that conversation as much as I did. I just love Deborah's energy and the message that she shares. And I hope that you all found that helpful and inspirational, as well as some real tools and tactics that you can take away and put to work for you to find more joy and more happiness in this life. So that wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and for listening and for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet, now is a great time to hit that subscribe or follow button so that you never miss another episode. And by the way, don't forget that on my website, when you sign up for my newsletter, there is a free email, 5-day email course called Find Your Forward Fundamentals. And so check that out. Let me know how it goes and give me some feedback on it. I'd love to hear from you. So with that, I hope you have a terrific week and that you continue to thrive no matter what.